For returning listeners, welcome back to the InfraDig podcast. For those of you who have stumbled across this series on one of the numerous platforms that's being hosted, let me tell you why you're here, or give you an early reason to opt out. The InfraDig podcast series has been set up as a platform to interview specialists who are active across the infrastructure and energy arena to share wisdom and understanding across this fascinating asset class. My name is Angus Leslie Melville, and I'm Editorial Director of IJ Global, Infrastructure Journal. This is an online publication that focuses on the financing of infrastructure and energy across the globe, and we have a couple of market-leading databases on just these subjects. Today, I have with me a friend of some 15 years standing, maybe more. I kind of lose track, if I'm honest. This is someone I've known in a number of guises. In fact, I would say she has one of the most dynamic CVs in the energy space. I have with me someone who I first knew as a partner, Norton Rose Fulbright, just Norton Rose at the time, where she became head of nuclear services. Then I knew her at PwC, where she was global lead for nuclear capital projects and infrastructure. Then she was involved in a really interesting interconnector project that, sadly, never came to pass. She's been involved in the Nuclear Industry Association for the last 6 years. And since 2019, she has been managing director of her own company, Fire Energy Limited. That's Fire with a capital F and a capital R, by the way. For those of you who have not worked it out, I'm talking about Fiona Riley, who I can now stop referring to in the third person. Fiona, welcome to the InfraDig podcast. Good to have you here.
Thank you, Angus. Long introduction.
It was rather. Now, down to my rundown of your career. Did I miss anything out?
I guess at the moment there's a few highlights that I'd probably bring to the fore which have stood me in good stead. So I chaired the Expert Finance Working Group for BEIS and produced a report for the UK government on how to finance small reactors. And I'm now a non-executive director of Ansaldo Nuclear, and I also sit on the Generation 4 International Forum for BEIS as well, and the UK representative and co-chair their Economic Modelling Working Group. And we recently produced a paper on making nuclear an investable asset class with reference to ESG metrics and how nuclear is one of the better energy sources in relation to being able to report well against a broad range of ESG metrics.
Blimey. But to be honest, that's really quite a fascinating career to date. You have worn a lot of hats. Your hat rack must be crowded. But there's one thing that remains constant, and your focus on energy and nuclear in particular. Why has nuclear always figured so predominantly in your choices?
So I stumbled across nuclear very early in my career, I think it's fair to say, when I first went to work in-house for GEC Alstom, as it was then, which shows my age a little bit. And I worked on a number of nuclear projects for them, and I also worked on site during the first outage at Sizewell B as commercial manager. And I just find the whole industry fascinating. It's generally misunderstood. And yet, particularly, you know, with the climate change crisis, there's a lot of focus on at the moment and where the energy markets are moving to with a huge focus on low carbon technology. Mm-hmm. Nuclear is just perfectly placed to address a lot of those concerns. It produces huge amounts of energy with relatively small land use for the amount of energy produced. It's one of the lowest carbon technologies. And for generations, we've dealt with nuclear waste in a safe and systematic way. And therefore, I just personally believe it is crucial to fighting climate change and meeting countries' low carbon ambitions.
Okay, so you're clearly a believer in the nuclear cause. Now, I've done a few podcasts with Tim Stone, with whom I know you're long acquainted. I've also done a podcast with New Scale Power in America. That was terribly interesting, all about SMRs, as you just mentioned. So I suppose nuclear is pretty much dogs me too. But before we get stuck in, you were involved in a number of new developments in UK nuclear. Now, I know you were involved in Wilfa and NuGen. Can you run me through your experience on these projects?
Yeah, they're interesting because of the lessons learned. I mean, sadly, both Wilfa, the Horizon project, and the NuGen project didn't proceed in the end. But they were both projects that should have worked and should have proceeded. Mm-hmm. And one of the key things that was missing at that time was the trust and confidence in the UK government to sit behind these projects and help them deliver. Mm-hmm. Thankfully, in the last few months, we've seen a dramatic change in interest from the UK government in nuclear. And I think that should help. And the other side of these projects is, of course, particularly with large nuclear, they are capital intensive. Mm-hmm. And for a long time, we've debated how we bring private finance into nuclear projects and bring them into the mainstream of project financing so that they become just another project that needs to be assessed as to whether a credit committee is happy with it or not, and to bring the financing in. And that's proved to be a huge challenge. Mm-hmm. And a lot of that challenge arises because of lack of government commitment. And we've seen government commitment on the renewables projects and how they've gone from strength to strength. Mm-hmm. And how the, you know, the wind and solar industry has moved ahead quickly, brought down the cost of those projects and brought financing into those projects. And we need that same support for nuclear. And then hopefully in the long run, again, nuclear will become part of the mainstream. Both the GE Hitachi technology and the Westinghouse technology should have been great technologies for this country. They are both established companies. They know what they're doing. They've worked in nuclear for a long time. They have a long heritage. And they should have proceeded well. But for various reasons, they didn't. And with NuGen, it even took Westinghouse into Chapter 11 in the United States and ended up with Toshiba selling Westinghouse. And we need to, the other thing we need to remember is Westinghouse and GE Hitachi are technology companies. Mm-hmm. They're not project development companies. And this was them or their parents putting money into project development companies. Mm-hmm. Which is not their natural place. Mm-hmm. So we need to find a way of setting up development companies, having market frameworks in place where government takes its role in these projects, which, to be honest, government does in all infrastructure and energy projects to some extent. So why should nuclear be different? And move these into the mainstream. There are things the nuclear industry needs to do. I've long criticised the industry for sitting back on its laurels a little bit and saying, oh, government needs to tell us what to do. And I don't believe that. I think the industry needs to lead this. But it's got to lead this with the support of government sitting behind it.
Yes.
And then we'll make these projects work. We can bring back industry to the UK. We can massively help the levelling up agenda. And we can then produce exports for the UK to help the UK economy. So there's a lot of good that will come out of these projects going forward if we can make them work. But it's got to be industry and government working together, mm-hmm. with the two remembering what their roles in these projects are, and then companies remembering what their roles in these projects are.
Yeah. Okay, you've been talking quite a bit about there about the UK and there were recent government announcements supporting nuclear. But do you feel it's been a fairly muted response from the market? And should we actually be more excited for the opportunity in the nuclear space?
I think there are huge opportunities. I don't think government's gone far enough. Mm-hmm. I think it's still a bit of a moderate, less than ambitious target that they set. But at least there's progress, I guess.
Yeah.
There's so many opportunities, so many technologies. We've got, we've obviously got EDF moving ahead in this country. We've got the Sizewell C project moving ahead, which has been in train for some time. We've then got a new project to Wilva with Westinghouse Technology and Bechtel and Southern supporting that project, which could be an amazing project for the UK and get that to work. I'm hugely supportive of that project and the technologies that it brings. And then we've got all the small reactor technologies, whether they're, you know, Gen 3 plus technologies like the Rolls-Royce technology or the more advanced technologies. And there are huge plays to be made. I mean, there's companies who are already looking at not only the electricity that small nuclear can produce, but the heat and how that feeds into the hydrogen market and then how it feeds into synthetic fuels. So we can help with cars, we can help with mainstream infrastructure, we can help with heating. And we know how to do this already. So why is the market being so slow? And I do find it heavily frustrating. And whether it's in renewables or in nuclear, it hugely frustrates me that the more ambitious projects struggle to move ahead because government finds them too ambitious and too challenging and, can we really get our heads around this? And I think we need to change that. There were some very bright people in Whitehall who get this and who can move these projects ahead if given the remit to do so and if given the power to do so. And I think we've just got to be more ambitious and more aggressive. And if we want to get back to being a world leader on energy projects and, you know, a scientific nation of the future or whatever Boris's words were around that, we've just got to get on with this and be hugely more ambitious in what we're doing.
Do you see a whole bunch of small modular reactors, SMRs, cropping up around the UK? Do you think that's going to be one of the responses that is going to solve the energy supply issues?
I do. The challenge is when and the challenge is which technologies. And I think we've got to make some quick decisions because we could spend years thinking about, oh, should we do this and what's in it for us and is this the best technology for us and what if maybe forget that, pick some technologies, get on with it. I don't think it should be one technology. I think it should be probably three. And we already know which sites are going to be used for the first lot of new small reactors. They're going to be the existing nuclear sites where the local communities are familiar with nuclear. They understand it. They understand that it's one of the safest technologies around. They understand the jobs and economic benefits, the local region that come with having nuclear plants there. And they will clearly accept these projects with arms wide open because of the benefits it brings to their regions. But then with, some of the technologies that are being developed now, and U battery that's being developed by UNCO is a good example of this, is they're not intended to be on a nuclear site and put the power going onto the grid. They're intended to be on industrial sites, in hospitals, in schools, but we've got to get people to understand that and accept that that is something that can happen. There was an investment fund I was talking to a few years ago who were looking at small nuclear because of their other business. And their other business was to build data centres. And they weren't actually looking at it in the UK, but they asked me the question, what technology should we be putting in place to build data centres? Because they were looking at building huge solar farms, taking up huge amounts of land. And of course, it's intermittent technology, which doesn't work well with data centres.
No.
I said, you just need a small reactor. Small reactor there, feeding the data center, pretty much constant power. Yeah, you've got outages, but pretty much constant power. It fits well with the technology. Mm-hmm. It takes up less land. It's easier to use. Mm-hmm. Why is this even a question? Was almost my position. And we've got a bit, again, we've got to be a bit more ambitious in how we think about these projects and how we think about solutions for the future. I'm currently advising on a fusion project, which is fascinating technology. And, you know, we all know it's the absolute ambition of everybody to solve the fusion problem and get fusion technologies onto the grid. And if we can, if you look at the money that's going into fusion at the moment and private fusion, we are talking about billions upon billions of dollars, pounds per year. So why is that not happening in nuclear fission? And it comes back to that lack of understanding and a fear almost, and a reputational fear. Mm-hmm. That thankfully a number of investors have now got their heads around and realised that that's not a reality. But we've got, I think it's incumbent on us to educate people to understand just how safe nuclear is, just how well run, just how well established it is, from everything from how we do uranium mining through to how we deal with our nuclear waste. Mm-hmm. And as I keep saying, become part of the mainstream.
Yeah, there's an old saying about, well, how do I put it politely, get on with your business or get off the pot. But you know, it's always challenging to get governments to commit to such a long-term strategy when they have such short-term horizons. So a decision like this needs to be something that has cross-party support, which I believe it does have now. So no matter what the decision, you can count on the next government, should it change in the UK, throwing its weight behind this, so that that's a positive, at least a positive situation.
It is, and there is cross-party support, and we see that in Parliament all the time at the moment. You saw how quickly the nuclear financing bill went through Parliament with very few amendments. Mm-hmm. And that is vital, because these projects are long term. Mm-hmm. You know, a nuclear project is 100 years. Power plant will, design life is between 4 to 60 years, but with life extension will run for 100 years. Yeah. And when we're looking at the economics of these projects, we need to start looking at them properly. So we're not talking about, oh, this strike price versus that strike price, which is illusionary. We need to look at what's levelized cost and what's the impact on the system and how do these things all work together. But you're absolutely right, cross-party support is vital. We've now got that. But also, we need politicians who want to make a difference and who want to make a difference to their grandchildren. Mm. And if we can get these projects up and running and we can help with the climate change issues and we can help reach net zero quicker, why could that be a bad thing for them?
Okay, well, that's all about nuclear there, and that's fantastic. Now, I mentioned earlier you've been involved in an interconnector project, the Atlantic Superconnection, if memory serves right. Now, that was a link to from Iceland to England, northeast of England, if memory serves. Now, this was a really exciting project. We all had great hopes for it, but that kind of fell apart, sadly, or is going to be revived, whatever. But you're now advising on the X-Links project from Morocco to the UK. What can you tell me about this project, and can you explain why you think these projects are important?
Sure. So the X-Links project is... X-Links is a company who are looking to develop a huge amount of wind and solar in Morocco. Mm-hmm. and battery storage, in fact, and then bring the power into the UK, much more as firm power rather than the intermittent power you'd conventionally get with renewables plant. Mm-hmm. So they are looking to smooth out the delivery of the power supply and to create a consistent supply of electricity for the UK at a low cost. I think these projects are fascinating because as a country, we are small and we have limited land resources to allow us to build huge swathes of wind and solar projects. And we've seen the success of offshore wind in the UK or in the States. And it's really building on that type of philosophy of moving things further offshore, moving it to places where they do have land that can be used. There obviously need to be benefits to both countries for doing that, and there needs to be a balance. But these projects should allow huge amounts of power to be brought in at a low cost to consumers. And I think it's vitally important that renewables and nuclear work together to help solve climate change and the climate crisis and allow countries to meet their net zero obligations and their NDCs. Mm-hmm. And therefore, it's another part of the solution.
Yeah.
It's not the case that these types of projects will be the whole solution.
No.
But they can be part of the solution.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, Xlinks is looking to build not only the renewable assets in Morocco, but two sets of cables to bring roughly around three gigawatts of power into Devon, basically, and to bring it into the UK, used in the UK. I think, as I say, they're part of the solution. They are an additional solution. They are hugely challenging, and they do need a bit of different thinking and a bit of different thought. They're complex. And as you know, from my love of nuclear, I love a complex project.
You do love a complication.
Say again?
You do love a complication, don't you?
Well, I'd like to see nuclear become part of the mainstream and get rid of some of the complications. I think people make them more complicated than they need to be. But these big projects are complicated. Yeah. It's easier for anybody to go for the small project. But the benefits to the country of these large projects is huge, and we need to get them right. And as we saw on ASC, we're seeing on Xlinks, we need to work with government to work out how that's going to work, what it's going to look like, and make sure it works for everybody. But the base is large amounts of low carbon power at a price that's great for consumers. To me, that seems a simple solution.
And Xlinks itself is it's pretty much just a just forgive me for saying just an interconnector between Morocco, all around the side, Iberian coast, across the English Channel, and into Devon.
So they wouldn't be an interconnector from a regulatory point of view, because you're not linking two markets.
Ah, yes.
So you're not trading power. Mm-hmm. Now, this gets into all sorts of complexities around what's in our Electricity Act versus what's in the international view of interconnectors. But it needs to be treated much more like a generating asset, because the power will be flowing one way. The assets in Morocco are being built to supply to the UK. They're not being built to supply to Morocco and the UK. So it's probably more akin to a very far away offshore wind farm with a very long cable. And as the other benefits of these types of projects is, as we see offshore wind going further and further offshore, we're going to have to use HVDC cable. We're going to have to build converter stations, because otherwise you lose too much power bringing it onshore.
Indeed.
And these are the forerunners of some of those projects as well, in terms of how you solve some of the technical solutions of laying cable over long distances and making sure that the cable's protected and power can deliver it. The good thing as well is we're talking about countries that work well with the UK, and they will provide the energy security for the UK that
we desperately need.
Perhaps is missing in the at the moment. And like the comments I made earlier about nuclear power, you're looking at you know, one of your favorite phrases, Angus, you know, good bang for your buck. It's you're building a large amount of power and using, with a nuclear plant, less land than you would if you bought the same electricity generation for a solar and wind farm. And for the UK, this is offshoring some of that, some of those aspects, but to a country that has the land that is available and is willing to work out a deal that works for both countries, that, that gives benefits to both countries to do that.
Blimey. Well, Fiona, that's been a lot. We've taken it from nuclear in the UK to, I don't know, solar PV and CSP in Morocco and great big cables running around the side of Europe, coming into Devon. Fantastic, ancient and exciting world to be in, and challenging, yes. Fiona, thank you so much for taking time to join us. I've thoroughly enjoyed our chat, as I knew I would. So thank you very much for your time and effort. Cheers. Now,
thanks, Angus.
Not at all. Lovely to have you here. Now for my parting message to our esteemed listeners. Please take time to like, share, follow, whatever you feel appropriate, and rate, but only if you're going to do it highly. For me, I leave you once again with the strongest desire that you found this to be anything but. In for a dig.